The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball emergency episode. We had a fresh episode this afternoon. It's not even, 7 or 8 hours old whenever we recorded it. Much bigger show tonight. Red Sox have acquired Wilson Contreras from the St. Louis Cardinals. The players going the other way in that trade is Hunter Dobbins and two minor leaguers whose names I did not write down and I was not familiar with before the trade. So I'm guessing two A-ball guys are going the other way aside from Dobbins. They also got Richard Fitz from us earlier and one of our better pitching prospects. So Haim is slowly trying to get the entire Red Sox farm by the looks of it. But Contreras is a guy that I kind of thought was a very viable fallback option. I actually mentioned him last summer as someone we could potentially trade for. The Cardinals were essentially out of it, and I thought perhaps that could be a move to be made. It did get made tonight, just a few days before Christmas. So, Chris, thanks for joining me. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, first off, I mean, just the fact that, I mean, Haim Bloom has been involved in as many acquisitions for the Red Sox this offseason as Craig Breslow, as funny as that is for us. But my thoughts are, I mean, listen, it gets things started for the Red Sox, right? Because, I mean, it was only a mere couple hours prior to that we were, as bastards, thinking we haven't done anything and who the hell knows what this team was going to be able to do. I mean, we were questioning why we even wear our Red Sox hats at this point. So it's a step in the right direction. I mean, Wilson Contreras is certainly not the bat that we were hoping as far as power, and realistically, he's probably going to have the most power of any of the options that we are going to have this offseason, even if we do get another bat, because I do believe that, let's just say even we did sign Bregman, not that I want him because I don't, I believe that Wilson Contreras will hit more home runs next season than Alex Bregman, regardless of, I mean, injury withstanding for both of them. You know, Dobbins, it's a little bit bittersweet because the thing I liked about Dobbins is he was young, controllable, and I mean, let's face it, in some big spots over the last two seasons, Sunday Night Baseball, Yankees games, Yankee Stadium, he shoved. But there was concerns, obviously, especially coming off of that injury, which that hasn't really been talked about by many people. Who knows what he's going to be coming back from that, even though I know it was leg, not an arm. But you just never know. It was still, I think, serious enough that there's question marks there. if this is the only thing we do, obviously it does not quench my thirst for this offseason. But if it's the domino that is going to start something beyond that, then, I mean, piques my interest. I mean, to step in the right direction. Just the fact that I don't have to see Tristan Casas immediately when he returns, if at all. I mean, that's a check mark in my book for positivity. So what are your thoughts?
So my disclaimer is I like it. And the reason why I'm giving a disclaimer is I don't want my words to get twisted after. I don't know that this is so much a needle mover in and of itself. I don't know of it. You know, I said in the last show 7 hours ago, we are a fifth place American League East team. And I don't know that this leapfrogs us all the way to second or third in the AL East. But what the move is to me is a stabilizer. It stabilizes your lineup. You get a guy somewhere that's going to hit third to fifth. Probably third or fourth, realistically. But you get a guy in there that's, you know, he's going to hold down that spot. And that's important. But like you said, when it's not going to quench your thirst, you do need one more bat.
Oh, for sure.
You've got your first baseman now. You've got a shortstop. You got to figure out the other two positions.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, this move... I'm not as down on it as the Sonny Gray trade, but when you think about just like from a holistic viewpoint, 10,000 feet, right? Sitting up in the ivory tower, if you're managing the Red Sox, and we go into an offseason where we're like, okay, we need a number two starter and we need at least two bats. We get Sonny Gray as the quote unquote number two. And we're like, all right, the fact that we have to ask if he's number two means he's not a number two. And then we're all like, all right, Pete Alonso, he's the power bat. We don't get Pete Alonso, and now this is the first bat, maybe the only bat. I hope not, but I mean, that's a reality. It's like, okay, this isn't quite the power bat. So it's very reminiscent and ironic that the fact they both came from the St. Louis Cardinals. But I mean, yeah, I'm okay with the move. I think the move itself doesn't bother me. I think what concerns me is when I start looking at the fact that of the players that are out this season that were on last year's roster, you're talking about Bregman, Ref Snyder, May, Lowe, Wilson, Matz, Bernardino, Murphy, Hendricks, Guerrero, Winkowski, Dobbins, Fitz, Criswell, Garcia, and Grissom. And all we've gotten in is Gray, Contreras, Oviedo, Bennett, and Jackson, and literally no dollars have been spent to get those players in free agency dollars, and we haven't signed any to contract extensions. I recognize there's going to be money shifted as far as the contracts overall, but that's still mind-boggling when we literally came into an offseason saying you need a number two and you need two bats. And you have 50 players go out, four or five come in, and there's been no real dollars added outside of just the contracts going back and forth is disappointing.
Well, one of the things I look at here is you look at the first base position over the last decade, and where does Contreras rank above them? I know he hasn't played a game, but let's just base it on his past history. I mean, you had Casas good for a 3-month period. That's all he's ever given you. You had Franchy Cordero, Bobby Dalbec. Played a ton of games at first base before we finally pulled the plug on him. In 2018 and parts of, I think, 2019, you had the Moreland-Pierce platoon, which was very good as a platoon. If you were to combine them into one player, you've got a very good first baseman. And then for a few years before that, you had Hanley Ramirez. So this has the potential, Wilson Contreras has the potential to be one of your best first basemen in the last decade. So, I mean, I think that speaks to how bad that we've been at that position versus how good the trade actually is. But I like the move, and I haven't seen the charts. I don't know how his metrics play in Fenway Park. He'll turn 33, or is it 34? My bad. I should have confirmed that. 1992. Yeah, so he'll be 34 next May. That's fine. His bat speed, if you look at his Savant chart, which is very good, there's a lot of red in that chart. His bat speed is still elite, 95th percentile. And that's typically something, you know, hitters start to lose as they get into their 30s. So, you know, we're getting a guy that's very serviceable. And we didn't really get into the contract here. So the Cardinals are sending $8 million, which isn't very significant. I was kind of hoping for more. He'll make $18 million this year, $18.5 million next year. The one interesting detail that he's apparently agreed to is he had a full no trade clause, and he still will for 2026, but he will not for 2027. And perhaps, you know, we're going to keep saying it, you know, if there's a strike, what does he care? You know, maybe they're all just anticipating that. So, but if there happens to be a season next year and the Red Sox want to trade him, they can. He also has a club option, an affordable one, I think, for like $17 million. That would be his age 36 season. I mean, that's too far away to figure out if that's going to make a whole lot of sense now, you know, in Christmas of 2025. But I like the deal provided another relatively impact move happens. And I don't know if that's a trade for Marte. I don't know if you're going to package up Jaron Duran and maybe another player to go get that other, you know, person of need. But it's a start.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a start. And, you know, to your point, as far as where he ranks as far as first base in the last decade, you know, I think it's funny. The first base position for us has kind of been overshadowed by the fact that we never replaced Petey at second base to the point where no one really was, quote unquote, concerned with it. But when you really look at it, I mean, Mitch Moreland was our best defensive first baseman in the last decade, which is pretty crazy to think. And it Wilson Contreras is like the second best. It's not even close at this point. We have not fielded a quote unquote elite, and I shouldn't even say elite, an average or above average at best first baseman defensively since Mitch Moreland, which is mind boggling. So I mean, there's a lot of positive there, and I'm not down on Wilson Contreras. You know, the bat speed thing is a great point, and I truly like when I look at his projection for 2026 coming to Fenway Park, right-handed bat. He could run into 30 home runs. That wouldn't shock me. I fully anticipate and expect 20 to 25. Again, it's not the power bat that we wanted or expected, but it's better than nothing. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. And I think he'll probably bat, I'd say 275, maybe 285 at best, which is, it's serviceable for a first baseman, especially if he's bringing above average and the best defense we've had in a decade. So I don't want to be too down on the move. But yeah, I mean, if we don't do anything else, it would be disappointing. I think I have to be honest. If I'm Craig Breslow, I don't even know if a Ketel Marte trade makes sense unless they come way down on the asking price, because I still don't believe in Sonny Gray as the number two. And I'm holding out hope that there's going to be some sort of improvement there. And if there's going to be an improvement in as far as, unless you go out there and sign Ranger Suarez. And if you do that, then great, because that just costs you money. But I know this team doesn't want to spend money. And if you're going to spend money, I think I would go spend it on Bo Bichette, give him a 5-6 year deal. He's still relatively young. And then take, you know, Duran and some of the other assets that we have, even though we have really gone through quite a bit of our assets here, especially in the pitching realm, to acquire these players and go out there and try and get number two. I don't know if it's possible, but to me, that's a more realistic way to improve those two positions. Sign Bo, use Duran and some prospects that we care a little bit less about to acquire a number two pitcher. What are your thoughts?
So I think Bregman and Bichette are out. I don't reasonably expect that we're going to spend $25 to $30 million on a second player. I hope I'm wrong, but the reason I've kind of dug into that is because we're basically at the luxury tax right now with this trade. So I don't know. I mean, signing one of those two players, Bregman or Bichette, is going to get you pretty close to the second threshold there. And they've already indicated, you know, they're willing to cross it, but not necessarily by a ton. So you're going to have to get super creative here to fill that need. Now, there are players. I mean, you could package up, let's say, Jaren Duran and Patrick Sandoval. I mean, that would free up about $17 million. I don't know who you get, you know, to, you know, kind of fit that money. And you know, I mean, if Bichette could be had for $25 million a year, I mean, you're only a net of $8 million over, you know, the $17 million you just moved. So, I don't know. I don't know how we're going to get there. And you kind of joked about it. The troubling thing here is Breslow isn't wheeling and dealing with Sharks. He's not calling up Atlanta and making a big move with Alex Anthopoulos or Dave Dombrowski in Philly, or, you know, another, or as we've been monitoring, you know, Mike Hazen in Arizona. He's not dealing with those guys. He's going to guys like Heim Bloom, Ben Sherrington, guys that don't have a lot of leverage in trades. And, you know, he's done okay, you know, at least with the Contreras move here. But so I don't know. My confidence level is still pretty low that Craig Breslow is somehow going to adequately check off all the areas of need here, you know. And the other thing too, if you're looking at the Marte trade, Dobbins, I mean, I was a big Hunter Dobbins fan, you know, and I was trying to be realistic. I didn't know what his ceiling was, but everything we saw was encouraging. And when you can go into Yankee Stadium and shove, that's important. You need to be able to handle the bright lights and be able to pitch in hostile environments. And, you know, he was kind of showing some signs that maybe that's the type of pitcher he could be. So the fact that he was in the trade, it hurts a little, but we had to give up someone. So, I mean, I'm not criticizing it. You still have Early, you still have Toley. So I think that's important. But I don't know. I mean, if you deal a significant package to Arizona for Marte, your depth is going to take a good hit after that, I would say. So that's another reason my confidence level in Breslow getting one more key hitter into this lineup is
well, that's why I think the hitter, if I know they don't want to, but, and again, you said it as far as, because again, do I think they're going to spend it? No, but to me, if you're going to really upgrade and be able to maneuver this roster, to me, the hitter has to come without giving away the farm. Because I mean, at this point, like you said, you start going to Ketel Marte, you want to talk about uncomfortable, which, listen, this Dobbins getting rid of him, it's a little bit uncomfortable. So I'll give Craig a little bit of credit there. But you start talking about Early and Peyton Toley, now we're talking about real levels of uncomfort for the fan base. And it's not going to be just those two. They're going to get them. There's going to be other people being in that, thrown into that trade. And again, that doesn't fix your number two, and then only hurts your depth. Now we literally have no pitching depth. We came in here with a plethora of pitching depth and would have none if we got rid of those two, even if you got rid of just one of them, to be honest with you. To me, if you're going to get creative, I think you remove, to me, those names are only on the table if it's Tarik Skubal and Tarik Skubal only. So I don't think that's going to happen. So let's just take them off the table. If I'm Craig, again, I would go out and sign Bo Bichette, but if you're talking about making trades, how about names like Brian Bello? You know, he's on a reasonable contract that could free up some money and create a bit of, you know, wiggle room for us to start thinking about another contract and bat, whether that's Bo. Although I have to be honest with you, I feel like the Red Sox are still going to try and go after Bregman, as much of a mistake as I think that is. And I feel like they would over splurge for him versus Bo, which is just so stupid with the reports that we hear. But Brian Bello, Duran, maybe even Tristan Casas, right? There's a team out there because he's somewhat expendable at this point. I know Wilson Contreras isn't going to be here forever. By the time he comes off the books pending a strike, it's like, what value will Tristan Casas really have, if any at all, depending on what his tenure with the Sox and in the system is at that point, barring he even comes back from injury. You start talking about those players and you can kind of free up a little bit of money, especially with Bale, which, I mean, we all agree, if one of the guys in the rotation is expendable at this point with the moves that we have made, it's Brian Bale.
It's tough. I don't see Brian Bello as a real game changer for the Red Sox necessarily, but I just have so little confidence that Sonny Gray is going to be the Giolito type guy this year that I just feel like you could really shoot yourself in the foot if you don't have a Bello type guy still in the rotation.
But I'm saying if you got rid of Bello and then that helped you get a number two. Because now Sonny Gray is nowhere in the conversation. I'm sorry, I should have been a little
more clear on that. Yeah, I was still thinking of a bat for Bayo. Okay, so yeah, if it's a lateral move and you're gonna still, I don't know if you could go get a Ranger Suarez type guy. I'm not sure who's available via trade necessarily, but if you're getting at least a number three one way or another, then yeah, I'd put Bayo in a trade.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if you could package those guys and fetch a bona fide number two, because Ranger Suarez is a free agent, so we could sign him if we wanted to. Just like we could sign Bo Bichette. They're probably trying to sign Alex Bregman. Please God, no. I don't know. It's just, to me, that's how you can make this team better and check off everything. And it's like, yeah, it's not Pete Alonso, but to me, you get Bo Bichette or a bat of that elk on this roster. I see a lot of people talking about, his name's slipping me. The third baseman who was on the Mariners.
Oh, Suarez.
Suarez. And we just said that name. Yes, I see everyone talking about him, and it's like, yeah, he's got power, but the dude has a strikeout rate that I just don't want anything to do with. And I just feel like he's only going to diminish. You go get a Bo, and you take a Duran, a Bayo, and a prospect and turn that into a number two pitcher, take their money off to kind of absorb some of the Bo contract and then whoever you're bringing in. And like, I feel like we're a better team than last year. Not even a question.
Yeah. You need one more bat for me, and you really still do need a number two. I don't even know who the bat would be at this point. Now, I might have taken Suarez on a one-year deal, but I don't know. That doesn't make any sense now because you probably would have had to have played him at first. I don't think he's, at 35 years old, going to be nearly adequate over at third base. So I think Suarez is out now. I think Bregman is out. And I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. I bet sometime in the next 7 days, Bregman's going to sign. Now that the Red Sox appear to be off the board in terms of what Bregman is looking for a deal, I think he ends up signing. I think the urgency right now for Scott Boras is going to be increased, and I think he's going to want to find a home for him really fast, especially before, you know, teams, he needs to do it before Tucker signs, because if Tucker signs with anyone but Toronto, you know, Bichette's market's going to heat up all of a sudden.
Yeah. So I agree with that. I think that's Bregman, if he's banking on Tucker going and then him being the hot commodity, I really see Bichette's market heating up extremely hot once the Tucker piece falls. Now, if he waits that out, once Bichette signs, then maybe he becomes a hot commodity. But I agree with you. I really do see Alex Bregman getting signed before the new year. So I'm on board with that. I don't know. It could be this, all the media stuff out there and some of the other podcasts. There's just so much talk about Alex Bregman. The fact that like the Red Sox are still being attached to it, I mean, just scares me. I mean, maybe the fact that we are attached to it means it's almost a foregone conclusion we're not getting him, because anytime our name is mentioned with anything, it never happens. So maybe I should take it as the opposite sign. But I hope you're right. I hope he does sign before the new year, and it is not with the Boston Red Sox. And it's not about hating on Alex Bregman. You know, at the end of the day, he signed a contract with us. He knew what he was doing, putting those clauses in there. We knew what we were doing. So, I mean, let's all take accountability here. And things just didn't work out. He got hurt, and I don't see him being the same player he was. And I mean, looking at the statistics even before the injury, like, he was already on the decline. So I think people just need to let go. This team needs to fly without him, and the team needs to be better for the long term, and I believe that's without him.
I 1,000% agree. I mean, if he wasn't regressing, then the last couple of years wouldn't reflect a lot of regression. So he's regressing because he's regressing. Very scientific take by me there. But yeah, so what happens from here? Extremely open to interpretation. I don't know which way it's going to go. I don't know that Breslow knows what way it's going to go. I think, getting back to Casas real quick, I think there's a good chance he's the third piece of a trade. You know, he's not going to be the centerpiece, obviously. He's not going to be the number two piece, because there's just so much uncertainty with him. Is the guy capable of breathing without hurting himself? You know, that's the first box you have to clear. And but I think some team will take a flyer on him. I don't know who that would be necessarily off the top of my head, but I don't know. I mean, he could be packaged in with Duran and a pitcher to get a big position of need. Eventually, I'm going to stop talking about Fernando Tatis, but interestingly, the Padres did sign Michael King, so that tells me they want to try to compete. So I think I'll start to finally cool down off of that. But another guy you could possibly package in with Duran is Rafaela, who's making, I think, an AAV of $8 million. So if a team they're not in love with their outfield, you could possibly get a couple from the Red Sox here, and you'd still have Anthony Abreu. And I don't know what you would do with that extra spot. I'm sure, I mean, outfielders are a dime a dozen, so you could probably find a quick solution.
Christian Campbell in the outfield.
That's it. There you go. You just solved it. He's the forgotten guy all year.
Yeah. So I mean, he's another one that's interesting. Like, I agree with you. If you're gonna trade the outfielders, it needs to be Duran and Rafaela, honestly, over and a guy like Abreu or Christian Campbell, just because of the money aspect of it. Although, wait, Christian Campbell actually did sign an extension, didn't he?
Yeah, he's making about what Rafaela is making.
So, to be honest, maybe those two on top of Duran are also the commodities that you could move to kind of massage some of the money if you did decide to go out there and spend. I see someone asked who Terry would prefer to sign, Bichette or trade for Tatis. If the dream for Tatis is still alive, Terry is always going, that's his number one. So I'll answer that question for Terry. And I think most of us would be in agreement, pending obviously what the return would be. The thing is, I don't have confidence in Craig Breslow being able to execute a trade like that. He seems to be very comfortable dealing with ex-Red Sox GMs that have absolutely no leverage, and were once at some point probably more hated than him, although he's quickly supplanting these gentlemen as the most hated general manager of the Boston Red Sox, or vice president of baseball operations of the Boston Red Sox of the last 20 years. if he continues down the path he has with his ineptitude and lack of quote unquote boldness. I don't know. Like I said, to me, there's no doubt in my mind that Craig Breslow definitely doesn't know what he's doing next. I mean, he admitted it with his quote in the offseason, as far as like as soon as free agency started, where it's like you go in there with a plan, then all of a sudden you realize your plan's not going to work. Okay, so you went in with a plan, couldn't execute it, and now you don't know what the hell is going on. So I would venture to guess he still doesn't know, because it's a very fluid and linear situation, free agency. So I don't know what the next move is. There needs to be more. And again, it can't be one or the other. It can't be a bat or just a pitcher, because yeah, it's better than what we've had or expected at this point going into tonight. But I can't honestly say the team's better for it compared to last year. And that's a team, again, and I keep saying the same thing, that as a team that literally, you know, couldn't even get out of Yankee Stadium in a wild card round. You know, they won the first game, and we forget, like, we could have lost that game. For all this, Chapman almost imploded in that game. He loaded the bases with no outs. We got out of it. We were lucky to. And I'm happy that we did. And the truth is, we were the better team that night. And for the first half of the innings played in game two, we were the better team. When we came back, stormed and took that lead. And then, you know, the strong part of our team as far as the bullpen came in, and Red Sox defense did what it did, squandered that lead. And then that was the end of the season, because game three wasn't even competitive. So, you know, we have to improve if we have expectations of this team getting better and being able to get out of a freaking wild card round with a Yankee team that was completely not at full strength and was the perfect time to be able to pounce on them and take advantage. And we didn't.
And, you know, we dominated the Yankees for the, you know, the first half of the season. And then, you know, they came, I think they kind of turned the tide on us in September and then won the October series. But yeah, I don't, like I said, I don't know. And going to Juan in the stream here, when he asked me about Bichette versus Tatis, the important thing about Tatis is he's a face of the franchise type player. He's not just a good player in your lineup. He helps give your team an identity. You know, don't get me wrong, I'll take Bichette every day, but you know, if that ends up being the move, but I think a Tatis type guy would really change the narrative and really give the team a much different vibe. And, you know, he's turned into a, you know, a gold glove caliber outfielder as well. So if defense is, you know, still a big priority, then he checks that off. Bo Bichette will not. So, yeah, but
Tatis is the type of guy that could make you forget the Mookie Betts trade and the Rafael Devers trade. If he comes in here with this young core and we improve the team and we go on to win a World Series 2 in the next 10 years. Like that's the reality of a Tatis versus a Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette, again, same thing. Totally would take him any day of the week. Please sign him. But Tatis is the kind of guy, and again, I mean, we talk about the Mookie trade, the Devers trade now almost every freaking episode. He is the type of guy that could make you forget it if things go well.
He could. And as you said, I mean, and as I even said, in my opening take, I still think we're a fourth or fifth place team as currently constituted. And I think some fireable moves have happened. The Contreras one, I don't think will be one that gets scrutinized going forward, but some of the other moves will be. If Oviedo just continues to be the same guy he was with the Pirates and they don't identify something fixable about him, and then Sonny Gray just ends up being what he has been at Fenway Park and Yankee Stadium and in relatively small sample sizes, those are fireable moves. And I think at the end of the day, I think looking back at Breslow's full body of work, I think the Devers trade will loom the largest if if we don't get that type of offense back into our lineup. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing is we still have not replaced the output of Devers from a power perspective. And the truth is, you know, when we said after he was gone and the money was freed up, it's like, all right, you don't have to do it in one move. You could do it in multiple. And if it makes the team better defensively and you do it through multiple bats as far as the output, like, okay, like we could live with that if it makes the overall team better. But right now we haven't accomplished that and we haven't replaced the production. So that's what, you know, leaves us in a position where, again, like this Wilson Contreras, this needs to be a foundational block to get things kicked off and build on this to really catapult us to that next level. But if it is literally the end cap, then no. I mean, it's something that we all have to be grossly disappointed in. And again, it's not about Wilson Contreras at that point. It's about the ineptitude of this team or front office, in particular Craig Breslow, in recognizing that this is still a net negative over a team that got bounced by the Yankees in the wild card. And we're better than that as a franchise. And I'm just, we were fed BS for all these years of like, wait till the prospects get here, wait till the prospects. Well, we traded one of them. One came up, got hurt. The other one came up, completely had a mental, you know, fit. And then the other one was, you know, caught fire and then got hurt. So right now we have none of them. We have none of the prospects that we could 100% say with absolute certainty is the guy who is going to take us to that next level. But they are here, and this franchise promised us that once they were here, they would invest in the team. They got Crochet. That was a start. But then they traded their $300 million man, replaced him with a guy that they literally signed to a contract that we knew he was going to opt out of, in which he also didn't live up to the contract, got hurt. We haven't replaced either one, and we're dumpster diving with ex-GMs of the Boston Red Sox that we couldn't wait to get out of town. That is not what you promised me for the last 5 years. So it's time to pay up.
I agree, and I've got nothing left to add, so we will leave it at that. We will be back one more time on Tuesday, probably be a totally different crew from tonight, but we'll see if anything else does happen before Christmas. You would think that the Red Sox would want the narrative around the Christmas tree to be a little more positive. So maybe one more move could help, and there'll be less smack talk about the Red Sox front office during the holidays. But we'll see with that. And everyone, if you have to work for a couple more days, stick it out, and hopefully everyone has a good holiday. Take care.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.